Hello and welcome to We Knows Parenting. I'm Peter McNerney.
And I'm Beth Newell.
Asleep at the wheel. My wife. We are parents. We have a 2- and a 4-year-old if you're joining us for the first time. A son and a daughter, Bryn and Maven. What's up this week? You know what? I'm going to start because I feel like the week started with you leaving town.
Okay.
Last week we talked, Maven was a little bit sick. She threw up in the morning. We had to stay home from daycare. And then the next morning you got on a plane for your girls' trip in LA. And then Bryn immediately threw up as well. And I was home alone for the whole weekend by myself. Sick myself. Not terrible. You've been homesick with kids before when everyone was really sick.
Yeah.
And I got a little taste of it. It's no fun.
Not fun.
But you know what? I nailed it.
It seems like you had a very successful weekend.
I sure did. I think you probably had a more successful weekend in terms of having a time of your life.
Yeah.
What did you do with all that free social time?
We went on a boat. We stayed in a house with a hot tub. It was beautiful. Perfect. The life I would have if I didn't have children.
Are you thinking about maybe just doing that full time? You're just going to take off?
I mean, if you're offering, yeah. You know,
Beth, I'd like to offer you something. I'd like to offer you the opportunity to leave me. Take it or leave it. That's my birthday present to you. By the way, happy birthday.
Thank you. I did have my birthday. It was nice to come back and just do birthday with the kids and have like just... It's nice to... As fun as it is to be away from your kids, it's also nice to like get cake for people who are really, really excited about cake.
Mm-hmm.
And just be like, yeah, you guys get it. You appreciate my efforts. Sort of.
Something really funny. So your birthday was on Wednesday. It's the same day as my dad's birthday. And mm-hmm. my dad was going to be in town. So I was planning to take you out for dinner a while back on this night. And then I found out my dad was coming into town for that night. So I was like, hey, can we push your fancy dinner to another week?
Yeah, this was very confusing for me because...
I know. Well, I was playing a trick on you.
It was a trick?
Yeah. Because I moved... I'm like, we're going to do a fancy dinner in a couple weeks. And I was like, my dad's in town. And so I have to go have drinks with him. We're going to do your birthday another time.
Yeah, but that's not how you presented it because you said my... You made it sound like your parents were in town and that we would push off our dinner so that we could all see your family.
I understand.
And then I found out on the night of my birthday that the plan was actually that for my birthday, you were going to go have drinks with your dad and I was going to stay home alone with our kids.
Okay, admittedly, that's always what I meant. I didn't know. I thought both my parents would be there.
Okay,
but it was a casual thing.
Really,
but
I
didn't explain it, but I was purposefully... Like, making it seem like I was totally bailing on your birthday. So that I could stay home, get a cake, make you a fancy dinner for me.
And then slip out the door and have drinks with your dad.
And then put the kids to bed and then drive to the city to have a quick drink with my dad. And we're still doing your fancy birthday when we get back.
Okay.
So we had the cake and the dinner all ready and we were waiting for you to come home and you got off the train and you called me and you said, I'm coming home. Should I pick up a cake or something?
Yeah, because it didn't seem like there was a lot of preparations happening and I thought my kids will not understand how it's my birthday if there's not a cake. So I need to have a cake.
In that moment, I was like, thank God that I was doing... Like if I... had actually done what I was trying to make you think I was doing, which is we're just not doing birthday today, and you had called me and been like, should I get a cake? I would have felt like, oh, I fucked up. But instead, I was like, uh-huh. You know, it's not hard to do, but I was proud of myself.
This is like your constant trick as a man is to set incredibly low expectations and then... ask for applause for the slightest effort.
I'm not asking for applause. I'm applauding myself.
Yeah.
That's fine. I can take care of myself. but it was like, I think the highlight of it, if you're right, is just it being exciting for Bryn and Maven. Like the,
yeah. That's well, actually, you're very lucky that I like to be alone and that I hadn't been in my own home for several days. So I was genuinely excited to lay in bed alone. But all that aside, a bit of a weird communication on the birthday.
True, true. I was surprised that the of the plan you thought that I had said. But it's totally reasonable that you thought that. I wasn't clear.
I mean, you literally said we were going to do a dinner for your birthday, but my parents are in town. So that just...
Well, yeah. I don't know.
That does not imply, like, hey, your new birthday is you're alone at home with your kids while I leave.
Yeah, but it was great. It was great.
Okay.
That's my new tactic. Set the bar real low. It's not
That's
new.
Not this a is new my tactic in life. This has always been your tactic.
You know what? God. Okay. I'm so happy that you've been alive for another year and that you're still my wife, and I celebrate you.
Thank you.
What else happened this week?
So last night I was thinking, as the summer slips from our fingers so quickly, I was going to try to get outside one more time and not be working the whole summer. And so I picked the kids up from daycare, brought a pizza with me, took them to the beach to have an hour or so of sunset on the beach. It was pretty successful. Bryn did try to go as deep as possible into the water and constantly try to drown himself while the lifeguards looked on in shock. And he was like bobbing around, and I kept trying to tell him, like, it's too deep. You're scaring me. You don't have floaties on. You don't know how to swim.
Let him dunk himself.
Bobbing right in there. And I was kind of like, I mean, he could stand up, and like at this point, I think he's starting. He is getting a stronger sense of like what he can do and how to deal with choking momentarily. But it was very frustrating. So then Maven didn't really get to go in the water at all because I wasn't going to help her in, because I wasn't going to hold her while chasing him into the deep water. And then he like ran around. He had fun. They quickly shut the water down. Like the lifeguards leave at 6. So
the sprinklers.
No, both. The sprinklers turned off at 5, so there was no sprinklers.
They shut the ocean water down? Even
you're allowed to be on the beach after 6, but they don't let you swim because the lifeguards leave.
We're turning off the ocean. No swimming.
And so that was kind of nice because I was like, okay, water's done. You can't keep trying to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we sat there, but then we were very quickly attacked by hordes of flies that were biting our legs. Yeah. And Maven was freaking out. So then I had to try to get, you know, both of them off the beach and like escape the flies while holding a pizza box and bag and everything. And like it was sort of a disaster, but thank God they can both walk better than like a year ago, because would like, I'd be carrying her and she'd be fine. Then I'd have to like put her down to readjust the pizza and everything. And then she's like, there'd be like, I looked over at her, there'd be like 6 flies on her legs and she'd just be screaming. Like she was just, it was the most traumatic thing that maybe has ever happened to her. she was just like, why?
And then, if you've never experienced several bugs on you, that's terrifying.
And they were actively biting us and it was painful. It was bad. And then, you know, this is kind of what I hate about the beach in our town, is that there's a playground right next to it. So it's really impossible to escape without doing a playground visit, because
you have to walk right through
the playground basically. And the Bryn is very stubborn and I can't carry 2 children dragging and screaming.
Yeah.
So they play on the playground for a while, again, both trying to kill themselves. Maven's like climbing up things and then she'd just like stop at the top of a slide and create like a log jam of kids trying to get down, and she didn't want to get down, and she's in like the tunnel slide just stopping everyone. And then Bryn,
that's the one where you can't get to the top as an adult.
Yeah. And then Bryn just kept like, I finally went up there and just went down it with her, but it was fine. And then Bryn kept like climbing to the tip top of like very dangerous, precarious things, and then he'd be like, mommy, help. Or he would be up high and I'd be like, okay, that's fine. Just like, don't go any higher. And then of course he'd like climb.
All that you'd hear was higher.
He was really trying to push his abilities. But they're alive and things are good.
Great job. Good job.
Thank you.
I'll say the one other, interesting thing that happened this week is while you were gone, I take Maven to daycare and she always comes back with pigtails. And she's always brushing her hair out of her face. So I ordered her a bunch of little hair clips, something I don't really know much about, but I've seen them and I was like, this is how these work, right?
I have to imagine that this is somehow related to the monumental amount of Drag Race you've been watching lately.
Okay. I have binged 8 seasons of RuPaul's Drag Race. At the same time,
in like 2 weeks or something.
Well, at the same time, I'm also binging the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe. Mm-hmm. And I have discovered that there is no difference between both of these things.
No difference?
I love them in exactly.
RuPaul's Drag Race is not scripted.
Well, obviously there are differences. But what I mean is
okay.
My enjoyment of both is the exact same. Okay. It is about fantasy, it is about transformation, it is about costumes, and it is about being superhuman, larger than life.
Okay.
And it brings me joy in the exact same way. And it's really, I've made this joke, but the more I joke about it, the more I'm like, this is true. This is a universal truth I now believe.
Well, remember we talked about this and I said, do you think if when you had grown up, if instead of theater in school, the only outlet was like after school drag, that you would have gotten into drag.
If that was my only theatrical option, 100% I would have done it. I don't want to do it.
I think you
because
do
I have
bit.
Performance outlets where I can achieve that like same thing. But as a
the literal exact same thing,
I mean, just like the performance of it.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm particularly well suited to be a drag queen. I think I do better than most of my male friends. Actually, at my dad, when I went out to have drinks with my dad, I spent a good 20 minutes trying to convince both of my brothers and my dad that they had to watch RuPaul's Drag Race. And they did not seem thoroughly convinced. I was like, you gotta.
I would love to see that conversation. There's no way they're going to watch it.
Well, I also love that I bought hair clips. Like, I watched Drag Race, and I was like, ooh, I'm into fashion now. Hair clips.
I think it's related. You're
maybe,
like, ooh.
Maybe. I mean, the result was we got them, and Maven loves her hair clips. And she put them in and just started laughing hysterically and needed to look in the mirror.
That was her reaction when I let her wear some lip gloss or, like, some tinted chapstick, or she put it on her lips, and then I let her look at herself in the mirror, and she was like, she was so happy.
Bryn likes it too. Something funny happened. Bryn, of course, I put clips in Maven's hair, and he's like, I want a hair clip. So I gave him a hair clip. He picked a black one, and he put it in his hair, and you can't see it at all. And then the other day, I went to pick him up from school, and he put the hair clips in, and one of his friends, as I was picking it up, friends like, Bryn, you look like a girl. And red flag went off in my head. And I was like, oh, this is, you know, toxic masculinity begins now. And, you know, fortunately, the people in charge were like, scolded that child. But Bryn did not care.
That's great.
He was just like, why? He's just like, that's a stupid thing
to
say.
He's like the kid that like loves being bullied. He's like, oh, are we talking about me?
He's like, yeah. And they're all any kind of press is good press for Bryn.
Well, he's, so I let him, he was like, you know, he came out of bed, he pooped in his pull up last night, and then he was like very talkative and chatty and was like, let's hang out. And he did his usual trick where he knows I'm not gonna let him watch his TV, so he's like, hey mommy, how about we watch some grown-up TV? So I was like, I'm tired, I don't have the energy to fight you. He was clearly gonna, like, when I tried to bring him in his room, he's gonna like scream and wake up Maven. So I put on the movie Grease and let him watch some of that, and then it weirdly turned into, I think, like him processing the fact that he's going to school, because he was like, they're in a school, oh. And like, there's like, Grease has like bullying, and someone like stepped on a ball and broke it, and he like pointed that out. And that the thing he was most into was like in the beginning of Grease, they have sort of like, you know, like romantic making out on the beach for their summer.
Yeah.
And
Summer lovin'.
And he kept laughing at the kissing and was like, and he was like, that's like how I kissed you the other day, like, because remember we were like hugging when I got home from the trip, and he made like a blowfish face, like where he like puffed up his cheeks, and he was like, I kissed you like this. And he was like, he's like very into that idea of like prolonged dramatic kissing. And he has been since he was very little.
Boy, I was really into that in pre-K.
Yeah.
I chased the girls and was very romantic.
Yeah. So, I mean, that could be what we have in store for preschool. I don't know.
Ooh, Bryn's gonna have a girlfriend.
He's not been around a lot of girls his own age.
It's true.
And remember, the other day he was telling us about how... What, this new older girl at daycare told him that he was being rude to his friend. And then we started trying to ask him about it. And he said, I'm not going to say one more thing. Like, he knew he shouldn't have told us that he was being...
But yeah, he accidentally tells us that he gets in trouble. And then we're like, what happened? He's like, I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah, it's very funny. This next segment is called We Knows Wins. It's where we share a parenting success story. Peter, what's your win?
My win this week is that Bryn is brilliant. I'm having a proud, little braggy couple days about Bryn. I mean, I love my children and I brag about them all the time. And I think a lot of parents do. And it's obnoxious occasionally, but you can't help it. It's like... I'm in love with myself, and it's not appropriate to brag about yourself. But, like, bragging about your kids is, like, the next most acceptable way to brag about yourself. Anyway, I'm off track already. So I went to drop Bryn and Maven off at daycare this morning. And I got there, and the teacher told me, she goes, I need to tell you, there's these paintings on the wall. And all the kids are making these paintings, and every day she gives them one color. And then they do a little bit of painting, then they put it aside. And then the next day they get a new color, and they add to their painting. And I thought this was a really cool idea. And she's like, most of them, you know, I looked on the wall, and it's just, you know, these are 1 to 4 year olds. And so they're just like
splattered
a mess.
Paint.
And splatter paint. And it's great. But Bryn's, and I could see it right away. Where Bryn, the day one, they had red paint, and so he painted 2 circles, and that's it. And he said, this is my daddy. And he goes, oh, okay. And then he goes, I'm done. And then the next day, he got orange, and he drew underneath the 2 circles just a straight line across. And it turned into a face, I think. But that's the mouth, and the red were the 2 eyes. And then the third day, he was given green. And he just did dots. He like stabbed the page with a paintbrush over and over and over, dots over the whole thing. And she asked him what that was. And he goes, that's my daddy's freckles. And I don't have a bunch of freckles on my face, but I do have a fair number of like freckles and moles on my arms and, you know, gross. Thank you. You're welcome for that imagery. But I've talked about it with Bryn, so he gave my face an endless number of freckles. And then the next day was blue, and he just did little dots all over my eyes. And she asked, what's that? He goes, daddy's sweating.
He knows you.
Yeah, and she was so impressed, and she was like gushing. She goes, he's brilliant in just storytelling. And I was like a very, very proud daddy.
You were like, that's me.
Yeah.
That assignment very, very much syncs up with his current obsession with the days of the week, where if we mm-hmm. ask him about something, it could be yesterday, but he'll be like, I did that on Wednesday.
Yeah, he doesn't want to say today, yesterday, or tomorrow.
Yeah, but he thinks about the days of the week a lot. So I would imagine hearing about an assignment like that, he was like, okay, let me plan this.
That's it. You know, I think that is a similarity between me and Bryn, which is that like that mix between, oh, there's rules, there's sort of math to this, but underneath it, then it's free association. And I think at best, it's that balance between that, like, I'm wandering, but I love that there's a structure to it. There's rules to this.
I had a former intern who told me that she can picture like a calendar of every year, and if you ask her about a certain date, she can like picture what happened on that day and like go through the whole month in her mind, like. And it was, I was like, she was like, does your brain think like that? And I was like, no. And I was like, that's insane. But I do sometimes wonder with some of these things, like if people have different abilities that they don't articulate because like when you say something like that out loud, it doesn't make sense. But
yeah.
Like some people, I think, just have more of a chronological mind. Some people have like.
Well, my cousin Pat, whom you know, is a brilliant guy. And he's like these really particular sort of skills. And one thing he can do where if you name 2 years, he will within like 10 seconds just name you a movie with two leading actors born on those 2 years. It's like the weirdest skill.
That's a really weird skill.
It's so weird. And it's like, how did you discover this? But it's...
But that's more like a obsessive, like, that's like he took the time at some point to look up the birth dates of those actors. Like, that's like...
Yeah. I didn't ask still, where that... I'm sure he didn't do that for that reason.
I know, but like, that's still something like born from sort of like a practice or like a...
Yeah.
Like... The calendar thing is just like your brain just did that for some reason. Like that's.
Well, so for her, it's a visual thing because yeah. That's like that makes sense to me. I can't do that, but that is more sort of how I process things. Just like seeing the actual map.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. Well, the other thing that Bryn did this week that I was so impressed with is we have these books that. He got for his birthday, and he's real obsessed with these three books. So every night we read these same three books. And there's one of the books has a donkey, a dog, a sheep, and a duck, and it's a series. And we've read the books a bunch of times, and then after we watched some episodes of Peppa Pig, which Bryn and Maven both fell in love with, I started... doing the voice of Papa Pig, Daddy Pig. And they thought that was really funny. And normally he like does not like it when I do voices. He's like, don't talk like that. But they got really into me doing this. And so then Bryn started to dictate how each character talks. And then he goes, okay, the doggy talks like that. The donkey talks like Daddy. And the sheep talks like Bryn. And the duck talks like Maven. So then I would do impressions of Bryn and Maven talking. And then the next night he always wants something different now. And so he'll go, oh, well now the donkey is Bryn. So no, I do it. And then Bryn will do the lines for the dog. I'll do the lines for the donkey. And then the duck comes along and Bryn goes, Maven, say quack. Maven, say quack. Quack. And he goes, good.
So he did this with me last night, but the new version he came up with was that only one of the characters in the book says their actual words, and then the other characters just speak.
This is something we already did.
Meep sounds, so they're like,
yeah.
And then this one character is just like cat.
So this is the Dust Bunnies book, and he decided that a squirrel sound is eep, and so in the Dust Bunny book, he goes, all of the Dust Bunnies are going to talk like squirrels, so we don't say the lines. Whenever the words are, we have to go eep, 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 except for one of the characters who's the character that doesn't know how to rhyme. You have to read his lines, which are usually him, and you have to do the voice. And you have to do the voice, which is him going, cat.
Yeah.
And they love it. That started with the previous book where he just asked me to read the whole thing, but for each animal, you could only say hee-haw, roof. Ba or quack. So I do all the lines, but just ruff, 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 ruff. Hee-haw, hee-haw. And he just laughed the whole time. And he's dictating
real,
this whole thing.
Like, improviser brain where he can just, like, map different things onto something very quickly and, mm-hmm. like, change the rules. And he's like, this is the new rules.
Yeah. I'm excited to see how it evolves. We're going out of town in, like, an hour.
Yeah. We're taking them... We're doing a family trip with our friends. This should be fun, I think.
Yeah, we're two other couples, one other child, a one-year-old. I'm excited to see Maven be the big girl.
The big girl.
The big girl.
She's not really too fond of Rhea. The last time they hung out, she was sort of like, I'm the baby. She's like, don't look at that baby.
Hey, eyes up here. Don't look at that baby. We'll see if she warms up to her this weekend.
But then when she took a nap, I was able to really bond with Rhea, who's a real cool kid.
Yeah, we look forward to getting to know you. We'll report back next week.
This next segment's called Did You Know?
Did You Know?
This is where we share some parenting information, facts. Peter, what do you got?
So, Beth, this is an article from the New York Times, which I think maybe you shared with me. I have it, nonetheless, either way, however. Anyway, so the gist of this is men today are much more committed to equality at home. Dishes, diapers, all that stuff. But even in families in which both parents work outside the home, the division of labor at home remains unequal. But the twist is, men tend to disagree. They say they do as much housework and childcare as their wives, even though the data shows that they don't. And let's just start there.
This is like something I feel like I'm trying to say all the time, and I've been saying for a very long time to everyone who will hear me talk, is just like, I simultaneously very much appreciate the way that men are stepping up and trying to do better. And you particularly, I think, have tried a lot harder and do a lot better than most men I know everywhere.
It's on the record. Yes.
But it's still not equal. And so we still are allowed to complain and ask for more. And so that's like, it's a very frustrating place to be in, I think, because a lot of times men like yourselves are like, but I'm doing so much more than before. When are you going to shut up? And I think it's not just like the household stuff. It's like, you know, all this Me Too stuff going on where they're like, okay, didn't we fix this yet? It's like, no, it's a centuries old problem. We still need to keep working on it.
I'll say that probably you brought this idea to my attention a while ago.
This has been going on since like before we had kids. But yeah.
Kids really amplified it. But for me, I remember very distinctly being like this, having like, wow, this is bullshit reaction to the thing that says like, you're not doing as much as you think you're doing. But since then, I know that that is 100% true. I know for a fact that I am never doing as much as I think I am doing. And at a certain point, like it was after Maven was born, is in the last year and a half, where this thing just occurred to me, which is, oh, if I have to make myself think that I'm doing virtually everything in order to be doing half.
Yeah, and I think someone, I don't know if it was our midwife or someone told us this, but it was like, they said in like an equal partnership, both partners feel like they're doing 60% of the work.
Yeah, and the funny
thing
happened.
Because there's a lot of work.
Yeah, well, the funny thing happened to me, which is, I'm like, I'm going for it. And I'm like, I'm going to take care of everything. So that there's, and it came from a spiteful place of like, there's, so that Beth has nothing to complain about. So I'm going to be one that can lord it over her. But a funny thing happened, which is I found that I was just much happier. And at worst, instead of being spiteful, like the worst part of it is me being proud of myself. And I was like, if that's the like worst thing that comes out of this, that's, I think it's okay. Right. And I know like I'm continually going like, okay, it feels like I'm doing everything. What are the things I'm blind to? And I know that there keep being things that are like, oh, you're still much better at big picture thinking ahead, like people's birthdays and all that stuff. I've gotten much better at the like all the things I need to take care of right now.
One thing I've noticed too is that the more stuff you do, especially if I like leave town and you literally have to do it all, the more stuff it does seem like you think of, like because you're in this world of like having to do the same thing over and over again, you're mm-hmm. like, oh, I need to order dishwasher detergent online so that I'm not screwed the next time I go to do the dishes. And like you are buying hair clips for Maven, which is like so far beyond what I would have ever expected you to think of in the past where I'm like, oh, yeah, that's like not a bad idea. And
you came home and you're like, where are these hair clips from? And I could tell you were expecting there to be like somebody told me to do this.
Yeah, or like your mom sent them or something.
Yeah, no, I literally had the idea and I ordered it and I had to hold myself back from being like, are you proud of me?
Yeah. Well, and sometimes you do stuff like that. Like, I think you bought like a salad chopper or something where I was like, don't do this. This is not helpful. But I think
that was a piece of shit. That thing.
I'm happy to let you have some of the failures. And I think we've talked about this where I can be a little bit controlling and I'm like learning to step back and let you fail.
Yes.
So that you can learn to do more.
And you're letting the biggest thing is like, yeah, you're letting me fail because I think you at your most, for lack of a better word, uptight.
Thank
it's
you.
It's like sees me failing before I try. And I'm like getting criticized for things I haven't done. And you let that go. And also when I fail, you don't rub it in my face. You let me learn from it. And well, I really appreciate
it. From my perspective, it's frustrating to watch someone be about to like do something wrong and try to explain it to them and then have them ignore you and then do it wrong in the exact way you predicted and then for you to not be mad.
What's funny
that.
Is if when you just let me fail, I learn faster because I'm not defensive.
Right.
If you're like, you're going to fuck it up. And I'm like, no, I'm not. And then I fuck it up. And you're like, you fucked up. I'm like, no, I didn't. I don't learn from it because all I'm thinking is I need to be right.
So just got to let some things go to shit. First.
Well, here's some other interesting facts from this that I thought were interesting. Interesting facts that are interesting. These are really interesting facts. So despite enormous advances for women in the labor market, they still shoulder much more responsibility at home. Before children, so this is interesting. Before couples had children, there was no gender gap between the chores. Men and women each did about 14.5 hours of household work a week, although the researchers did not know whether these couples were always so equal or whether men picked up more slack when the woman was pregnant. So this was a study that was done with pregnant couples into then having the babies. But after a birth, women's total work, including paid work, housework, and childcare, increased 21 hours a week, and men's increased 12.5 hours. For women, but not men, childcare did not substitute for any of their existing work. It was all supplemental. So researchers found less of a gap in time spent playing or reading with children than in physical childcare tasks like dressing, bathing, and feeding a baby. For women, the additional time came at the expense of their leisure time. And the last thing that was fascinating is modern-day working mothers spend more hands-on time with their children than mid-century stay-at-home mothers. Fathers have greatly increased their time, but still do not do as much as their mothers. This is a really interesting thing. So for women, who are obviously far more a part of the workforce than they historically have been, they're still taking on more of the childcare at home. So doing more work, it doesn't balance out at home on average. But on top of that, mothers are expected to be more hands-on and connected with their kids and involved and paying attention to them than they were a generation ago, where stay-at-home moms spent less one-on-one time with their kids than current full-time working moms are expected to.
This is like sort of the crazy trap of like millennial parenting right now, I think, is that we feel it's like the constant feminist trap where it's like you feel like you've made all these gains in the workforce and being able to have jobs and everything, but then you're just doing more things at once and there's no support system. And I think back when everyone is a stay-at-home mom, like people would have their aunts, their cousins, their mothers around to help them out with the kids, and that was just expected because there were all of these women around and people who didn't have jobs. And their job was to care for the community.
Also, kids were out. They were down the block. They were in the park. Even when I was growing up.
Right, but they were...
I walked to school by myself in kindergarten.
It's not just that people were more lax. It's also that people were able to do that because they had all these sets of eyes of all these women that were not as preoccupied.
Yeah, but it's also... I've read all of these, like, these women who have the police called on them because they... I just read this woman had a police called on her for letting her 8-year-old daughter walk the dog around the block. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she couldn't see her 8-year-old for 5 minutes. And somebody called the police. And then child services had to come. So that's a level of, like, you have to have your eyes on your child or people think you're a negligent parent. And that was not the case when I was growing up.
Right.
Like, I was alone. I was out. And my parents, you know, they'd spend all day outside, like, at the beach by themselves from a much younger age. And that's, like... That's so much time for a parent to keep their focus locked on. It's obviously many things.
Yeah. I mean, but this is also, like, this idea, this, like, judgment of women not being, like, the perfect mom and always having their eyes on their kids is, like, mm-hmm. sort of, like, a trick of the patriarchy to keep us from having progress in other areas.
It's true. When I went to the last patriarchy meeting... It was on the agenda, and it's like, it's working, gents. We got to keep it up.
It does work because it's like self-policing, because it gets in mm-hmm. women's heads that they're not like, that they don't look perfect, that they're not the perfect mom, that like, and then women police each other. And it's like, it's very effective to like you said, with this, like the amount of hours women are putting in housework and watching their kids and everything. It's like, all of this brain power that we all have that's like focused on our weight and all these other things, like if we were able to devote that to our careers, to mm-hmm. science, whatever, like the amount of things we could accomplish is insane.
Yeah. Well, it's also a point of this article, and we've talked about this before, is that when people have kids, their employers react very differently according to gender. For men, it's that, oh, you know, Peter had a baby. We got to, like, he needs to make more money. Let's give him more hours. Whereas, right. like, women have a baby and the attitude is like, whoa, we need to give her time to leave and go raise this child.
Well, that's not, they're not trying to give women time. They're coming down harder on women if they try to leave work a half hour early or something. And they, there's another article we read recently. I can't remember if we talked about it on the podcast, but they're talking about how these women who'd had kids, their employers had this assumption that they were going to start slacking off because they had kids. So then they would get docked for coming in like 5 minutes late or something. Meanwhile, their single colleagues would come in like an hour late and no comments were made. And it's like, that women are just constantly expected to work like 10 times harder than everyone else in every circumstance. And if there's a sign, if there's any signal that they might be thinking about their kids, it's like they just try to make them work that much harder.
So, gentlemen, my advice to you is do everything. Do every single thing.
And it's still not actually even close to everything.
And even if you really are doing more...
You're not. Don't worry, you're not.
I mean, the truth is, I really believe I'm doing more. But again, if that means I'm actually doing half, I'm still happier than I've ever been in my life. Oh, I love you.
Love you.
Now it's time for Listeners Wanna Knows. This is where we go into the mailbag and read an email. So this one comes to us from Michelle. I'm going to skip around a little bit in this email. So Michelle and her family are originally, they currently live in Vancouver. And so they're on a long 6-hour flight across the country with their 14-month-old. But that's not the question, though. While we were visiting family, I actually found out I'm pregnant again. I'm excited, but I have a lot of guilt, too. It feels too soon. My daughter is 14 months old, and part of the guilt is that I feel like I'm not going to get fully... I'm not going to get to fully appreciate the rest of my firstborn's tiny toddler years, because in 9 short months, I'll have a newborn. As a secondborn, I realize that this is kind of crazy. Of course, I'll love her just as much when the second one comes along. The other part is of my guilt is about my career. I took 11 months maternity leave. 11? Because
Canada.
Yeah, because amazing. I'm lucky enough to live in a beautiful social democracy that is Canada. But I've only been back at work for 3 months now. Back to my question. In the one glorious hour that my daughter slept during our flight home, I considered listening to a non-parenting podcast. After all, that was definitely what my partner was doing. But it's hard to forget you're a mother under the weirdly heavy, sweaty body of a toddler. I noticed that you mentioned your kids were 2 and almost 4. Happy birthday, Bryn. Thank you. That's basically the same difference that will be between my kids. It's actually smaller. What are your thoughts? Pros and cons of the ages of your kids. What did you do to your career, Beth? Peter, I guess you can talk about your career too. I don't know if this will matter, but I'm also the breadwinner in the family. I'm an architect, but not yet registered. There are a lot of expensive, time-consuming exams I have to take before I officially registered architect. I also feel guilty that I'm having another kid before doing that. I recently got a raise at work, and they told me they can't pay me anymore until I become registered. My partner and I are both 30. I appreciate anything you have to say on any of the topics above. There's a lot to hit in
here.
Wow,
there's so much here. So a lot of people seem to be worried about this thing about having the second kid and then not getting to spend as much time with the first.
The secret is, you will never stop paying attention to your first.
They're inescapable.
You will never pay attention to your second child.
I didn't really worry about this with Bryn because he's so attention hungry that I was like, he honestly needs the competition and he needs to learn that the world doesn't revolve around him.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, having a sibling, I was like, this would be great for him.
I mean, personally, I was 3 of 4 and it made me who I am. In a positive way, in that I had to fight for attention. I mean, I guess that could... it humbled me. Like, I know I'm not getting the attention all the time. So when I did get attention, maybe I deserved it, or I was at least being funny. Yeah, Maven has things taken away from her, and she doesn't freak out because, like, that's the life she's known. And yeah. Bryn has gotten all the attention.
But I think that her concern is not for the second kid, it's for the first kid. And I think that, like, the fact that we tend to feel that way towards the first kid is, like, probably an almost unhealthy sign of codependency. Of, like, that first kid gets too much attention sometimes, I think.
As soon as you have two, by the way, I think... Bryn and Maven were even 2 months closer than Michelle's kids are going to be because we found out you were pregnant with Maven on Bryn's first birthday when he was 12 months old.
Right.
So for us, it made the next 2 years after Maven was born pretty intense have kids that little.
It's really, really, really stressful. And then at the same time, I think we were thinking like, okay, we know exactly how horrible this is going to be with a newborn. At least it's all fresh in our mind and we just did it and we have sort of a game plan. Because I think because it's such an intense thing, you tend to sort of forget how bad it is very quickly and you forget like coping strategies. And so there is something nice about like lining them up and knocking them down.
Yes. In the end, I would do it the exact same way. Because it is like, let's get it over with. Let's get through it. Also, the ages that we were, you know, it's like, I mean, we have unique employment. You owned your own company. And so you were the one giving yourself time off, which, you know, there was very little money around it.
Yeah.
But I mean, you didn't have the same like sort of like being left behind fears.
But when it's your own company, it's like its own weird burden because you feel like you should be back like immediately. Like there's a lot of like as much as you can set your own terms, it's like a lot of guilt and a lot of like this thing's riding on me a little bit.
But I think she's going to get through it and still have like her whole career ahead of her. And it's going to be really fucking hard, I imagine, in the next 2 years.
So I think we've talked about this in the podcast about how hard the workplace is on working moms. And as much as I And there's like statistics that like the inequity that women face in the workplace stems from motherhood and the fact that moms are not treated well in the workplace. But as much as I truly believe that, I also think there's sort of a benefit in maternity leave and taking time off and like getting yourself out of the rat race for a second so that your brain can sort of reflect on what your career is and why you're doing it and what your next steps are going to be. Because in our culture, we work so much and we like never stop thinking about it and we're always chugging coffee. And so it's actually really nice to have that break and be like, wait, am I where I want to be? What should I be doing when I get back there? And how do I, like, when I re-enter the workforce, how do I establish a work-life balance that serves me and my family? You know, so there's benefits too. We just don't talk about them.
Mm-hmm. I think I am really impressed with, despite all of the challenges and stress, of how you used your time, like through this process. Because I have put myself in a situation in terms of employment where it's constant maintenance for a lot of the jobs that I do, and it's keeping the ball in the air, and it's a lot of like, gotta do this, gotta do this, and it's there's sort of a nonstop thing to it. And you, during the pregnancies, like disrupted the workflow in such big ways, and you used that time, I think, to define what was important to you, and then took the opportunity of the kids stabilizing in your life to like make shit. And I think you and we as an extension are in a better place for it.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was nice because I think with, I don't remember the exact timing of it, but with, I knew from the beginning of my first pregnancy, I wanted to sort of like write about that experience. And it like allowed me to meditate on the sort of, the way I wanted to make the world better for this experience for other people going forward. Mm-hmm. And so my point is, this is all very, very hard. And yet at the same time, we're all very capable, resourceful people, and you find ways to get through it and you're going to be fine. You're not going to.
Michelle, you're going to be fine. Even though we paint the picture like it's going to be the worst. Even when I was in it as like the worst, you know, except for a few like, 4 a.m, you haven't slept, those moments where you're like, I'm going to go crazy. It doesn't feel like the worst.
I mean, it does. You didn't experience it with a full head of hormones.
I regret saying all of that.
It will feel like the worst. It will feel like the worst. But it's you, based on the way she's talking about her kid and how much she clearly cares about her kid, I know she's not going to regret having her second kid. She's gonna love the kid, you know.
I'm so much happier now, like having a little family and having conversations with Bryn and Maven and them reacting to each other and growing up together. Mm-hmm. Is so much more fun and exciting than it was before, when you just, because we give so much attention to one kid. It feels like a project.
He was like running the show before, and now not as much.
Now he's just the captain. Okay, before we end, we're almost out of time, but I want to do a really fast Would You Knows segment. I've had this one on my list for a while, and it's so dumb that I want to do it real quick. Okay, so this comes to us from Ben. Beth, what would you do if we woke up in the morning and Bryn and Maven had turned into bats?
Wow, that's hard.
I mean, to the point. We're past the point where the shock, where we've accepted that this has happened and there's nothing we can do about it. They're bats forever.
You know they're bats forever? How do you know that?
Well, just I assume that's the scenario I'm giving you. We've already gone through somehow realizing
you already stumbled upon the spell book that our kids were flipping through.
Undoable spell.
I just don't believe that it's undoable. In the movie version of this,
this is real life.
In the movie version of this, I run into a bat expert or someone who, a scientist who's been studying bats, and then I have them look at my kids. I spend a full day trying to catch my kids. I put them into a container. get them down to the bat expert that I had fortuitously ran into on the subway a week prior. And, you know, they start telling me about the science of bats and we learn how to reverse the spell.
Okay, well, if this is a movie, that's the external conflict, okay? But what you're the main character. I don't know where I am in this
movie.
You're
saying internally, how do I learn to accept my children for what they are, which in this moment happens to be bats?
No, what is the internal conflict of this movie? The bats is just a metaphor.
I just said it, but you were talking over me.
Say it again.
The internal conflict is, how do I learn to accept my children as they are, which at this moment happens to be bats?
Oh, yeah, that you can't control. This is the movie. You're a controlling sort of career woman mom, and you want your kids to fit a mold. And they have to do these things, and you don't let them go out for the team they wanted because it's not time efficient.
I look it up online, like, what do you feed bats? And I'm probably putting, like, insects and healthy stuff in there, and then they're not eating it. And finally, I just give in and give them peanut butter, which is what they always want.
Those bats always want peanut butter.
My kids do.
In the end, you finally accept them as bats. And because there's a whole sequence where you try to dress them up as themselves and send them to school so as if no one would notice that they're bats.
I don't think I would do that.
Yeah, well, I'm changing the genre.
The sequence in the movie would be like, school is like, where's your kids? And I'm like, oh, don't worry. It's not a big deal. Everything's fine.
But finally, at the end of the movie, you come back to school and they go, where are your kids? And you go, they're right here. They're bats. And I'm proud of them.
They never turn back?
Well, after
you and I are after, two very different movies.
After you accept that they're bats and they're perfect and you can't control them.
And then
I
open the car door and it's just two kids sitting there.
And then that's when they turn back into kids, because the magic spell is only undone when you accept them for who they are.
When I say, my kids are bats.
and then you hear, mommy? And you look behind them and they're no longer bats. And you go, I get it. Lesson learned. Ben, that's what we would do. boy, I don't know where my character is in this movie, but I seem like a real shit.
Yeah, you do.
That is Would You Knows?
This has been We Knows Parenting. Please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. You can also find us online, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at We Knows Pod. You can also contact us through our website, weknowsparenting.com, or our email, weknowspod@gmail.com.
Or leave us a voicemail, 347-384-7396. If you can't remember a number, who can? Can anyone remember a number when it's just said? Don't even try. Just go to our website.
Go to our website.
And you can buy a shirt while you're there.
weknowsparenting.com.
We're going on vacation. Literally right now. We'll see you next week. Bye!